filling his garage with storage, and now he's parking out on the street, or he's, you know, turning the garage itself into a short-term rental and renting to a college student, the things you described. You know, I'm not going to complain to the city, because that's not going to be the city enforcing that. Although the city may need to know of it and know that CCNRs are not being obtained. The enforcer of that would either be a condo HOA or you if you own the whole building.
That's correct. And as long as I'm on the board of the HOA.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Good question for staff. Mr. Just had recommended or asked that on condition 15 that maybe that be removed to allow some flexibility, as there clearly are some moderate units in that affordable by design. That is something that we could do tonight if the council wanted. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Any other? Yes.
Pardon me. If I could speak on the affordable. I have a project currently in San Luis Obispo. We were required to do affordable elements. We have three of them. The units have been completed since July 11th, and we haven't been able to get anybody to qualify. It's very frustrating. So they just sit, they're empty.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I think we are good with questions, so thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
What I want to do is take a brief break, and then we will come back for public comment on this item. So it's currently 8:01. Why don't we come back at about 8:10?
AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Mr. President, he led the United States through two of the greatest crises in recent history, the Great Depression and World War II. As a man, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's confidence and vitality made him one of the most beloved figures of the 20th century. Though physically crippled by polio, Roosevelt rallied America through some of its darkest hours, assuring citizens struggling through the Great Depression that they had nothing to fear but fear itself. The nation responded by making him the only man elected president four times, the fourth in 1944, despite his increasingly evident deteriorating health. But with the nation still at war with Germany and Japan, the American people stuck with their courageous commander-in-chief. By April 1945, Franklin Roosevelt had been president for more than 12 years, guiding the nation from the brink of economic ruin to the verge of victory in World War II. But on April 12th, while vacationing in Warm Springs, Georgia, he suffered a massive cerebral hemorrhage.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Fulton Lewis, Jr., speaking from the Mutual Studios in New York City. This nation has suffered this day a staggering loss. At this moment at Warm Springs, Georgia, President Franklin D. Roosevelt lies with the problems of the nation finally lifted from his shoulders, stricken late this afternoon with cerebral hemorrhage. He passed away before his physicians could be of any assistance, if assistance in such a case is possible at all. Vice President Harry Truman, who from here on will be President Truman, went immediately to the White House. A special cabinet meeting was called, and we should know more about what is going to happen in Washington as the evening wears on. But Franklin D. Roosevelt, the first president to be elected for four terms in the White House, has passed away, and that is the overshadowing of all news events that have happened or can happen for quite a while.
The news of Franklin Roosevelt's death plunged the country into shock and mourning. Thousands stood silent along the railroad tracks as the train bearing his coffin made its slow trip from Georgia northward to his final resting place in Hyde Park, New York, bidding goodbye to a president whose indomitable spirit had inspired a nation through poverty and war, and whose legacy would benefit and inspire future generations of Americans for decades to come.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Welcome to Heroes of the Air, true stories of those who flew for America and earned the nation's supreme military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Heroes of the Air is brought to you by the Air Force Association, an independent nonprofit aerospace organization which promotes public understanding of the role aerospace power plays in our national defense. Your host for Heroes of the Air is Gene Pell.
The mission was daring and complicated. The flights of B-24s would take off from airfields in Libya, fly more than 1,200 miles, and approach their target area at treetop levels. The mission was also considered vital to the Allied war effort. Its purpose? Destroy German oil refineries that were the lifeblood of the Nazi war machine. Five U.S. airmen would receive the nation's highest award for valor when it was over. Ploiești, Romania, August 1st, 1943. One of those five was Colonel John R. Kane of the Army Air Corps, who led the third element of heavy bombers in the mass low-level attack. En route to the target, Colonel Kane's element became separated from the leading portion of the formation while avoiding dense and dangerous cumulus cloud conditions over mountainous terrain. But rather than turn back from such a vital mission, Colonel Kane elected to press on to the target. When he reached it, he discovered that another group had apparently missed its target and instead attacked and damaged the target assigned to his element. Despite the now thoroughly worn defensives, intensive anti-aircraft fire, enemy fighter planes, oil fires and explosions and dense smoke over the target, and the real danger of explosions from delayed action bombs previously dropped, Colonel Kane led his formation into the attack. By his brilliant courage, gallant leadership and superior flying skill, he and the formation under his command successfully attacked the vast refinery that was so vital to the enemy war effort. Through his conspicuous gallantry in this most hazardous mission, and by his intrepidity at the risk of life above and beyond the call of duty, Colonel Kane made a vital personal contribution to the mission's success. Army Air Corps Colonel John S. Kane was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor in recognition of his gallantry, courage, and heroic acts.
The Air Force Association is proud to bring you Heroes of the Air, dedicated to those who earned the nation's highest military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Their service and sacrifice reflect an ideal that puts others and country above self. AFA salutes all men and women in the Air Force who so selflessly serve our country each day at home and around the globe. Heroes of the Air is produced by Pelcom Communications in association with Radio America.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Love.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
There's a great American hero we all look up to. When the times are hard and chips are down, he knows just what to do. Now a cowboy's got a set of rules that he lives by day to day. If you ask for his advice, he'll more than likely say, if it's a fence, mend it. If it's a dollar bill, spend it. Before it burns a hole down in them jeans. If it's a load, truck it. If it's a punch, duck it. If she's a lady, treat her like a that's cowboy logic. Every cowboy's got it. It's in the way he lives his life and the songs he sings. That's cowboy logic. Every cowboy's got it. He's got a simple solution just about anything. If it's a job, do it. Put your back into it. Cause a little bit of dirt's gonna wash off in the rain. If it's a horse, ride it. If it hurts, hide it. Dust yourself off, get back on again. That's cowboy logic. Every cowboy's got it. It's in the way he lives his life and the songs he sings. Every cowboy's got it. He's got a simple solution for just about anything. An old cowboy and a young buckaroo were working, riding fence. The old hand was testing the kid on his skills and his common sense. He said, son, if you've seen three men in a pickup dressed alike from boots to hat, could you tell which one was the real cowboy just from where he sat? Well, the kid scratched his head a while and then he said, well, there just ain't no way to know. The old hand grinned and then he said, kid, you still got a ways to go. The real cowboy is the one in the middle. He ain't there just by fate. 'Cause first, he don't have to drive, and then he don't have to mess with the gate. That's cowboy logic. Every cowboy's got it. It's in the way he lives his life and the songs he sings. That's cowboy logic. Every cowboy's got it. He's got a simple solution just about anything. He's got a simple solution just about anything.
AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton.
At this time, AM...
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will resume in just a moment. You're listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton.
Thank you.
from me. You'd just all keep talking. All right. So what we're going to do is go out to public comment on this item. How many of you here in the public are looking to speak on this item tonight, just so I can get a sense? Okay, a small handful of you. You got a sense of the questions we asked, the things that we've gone over. We have read through all of the letters that came through, which are probably around 24 or so. I would ask that when you come forward, you can take 3 minutes, you can say anything you want about the project. What's most helpful to us is if it's either new information or new questions. I would ask that, there's not a particular need to reiterate things that have already been said. You could certainly say, hey, I agree, or something like that. But if you bring us new information or ask questions that haven't been asked before, that's most helpful as we then go into deliberation. So with that, if you'd like to speak, come line up at the podium, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Good evening.
Welcome. If you could pull the mic towards you. There you go.
How's that?
Yes, perfect.
Thank you so much. My name is Susan Harvey, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the Santa Lucia chapter of the Sierra Club. And we're here with a request that we hope that you'd be interested in a condition.
Could you come a little closer to the mic?
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I speak quietly, too. It's a condition of approval, and hopefully the developer would agree to. This area is right now, since there's nothing on it, it's a big drainage area, and certainly with development there'll be large drainage issues. And if the retention area and the gateway or other landscaped areas could be designed and managed as habitat, like I call them kind of active swales, habitat for California red-legged frog, because this is in an area that's a potential migratory area for the frogs. I think it could be even more beautiful than the normal kinds of nursery plants you might see, using natives, and then making it potentially just a great natural area for the indigenous frogs. I don't think it would be that difficult, and I think it would be a real benefit to not only the environment, but also for everyone involved, including the developer. So if that is amenable, that would be awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Harvey. Welcome, next speaker.
Hello, and thank you. My name is Bob Gold. Sue Gibson and I own in Dove Creek, and we're not at all against the project, just a couple of points. And starting off with, we all know the parking issue, so I'm not going to relitigate that, so to speak, but around the roundabout and then coming in on Bliss, should there become an overflow issue for parking, I'll put money on it, people will start parking there. So my suggestion is redlining it so that it says no parking. Everybody knows you see red, you don't park there unless you get you'll get a ticket. Most of the families, the units that are going to be sold are going to have two people in it. I don't know any family that only has one car. So if you do the math, there might not be enough parking spots available, so there's going to be overflow coming out to Bliss, Cashin, and possibly over the around the roundabout and over the bridge into our area. And there's a lot of children in our neighborhood playing in the streets, just like I did when I grew up. So something to consider about maybe signage, don't go in there, but the redlining is important to me. Utilization of the park is fine, but maybe a little bit of shared maintenance on it. Doesn't have to be 50-50, but something, because people are going to be using the park, and it's not our park, but we maintenance it with the HOA. And likewise, we're going to come over, and if there's a bar, a restaurant, we're going to go over, or a winery, we'll go over there and enjoy that part as well. So there is shared utilization for both sides. Totally against Airbnbs, because our CCNRs won't allow it. I know it was addressed that that issue is going to be, I believe if I understood it correctly, removed, so it won't be any Airbnbs. And my last comment is noise. If there's an outdoor event, which is fine, what time is it going to be shut down? Is it going to be shut down at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock? Things like that, because the sound is going to carry really quite a bit. And those are my comments. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Gold. Welcome, next speaker.
Good evening. My name is Tim LaSalle. I live just outside the city, but I'm one of six siblings that owns the property across Santa Barbara on the southwest corner. And that's why I got the notice about this meeting. And I really wanted to take the opportunity to kind of share some thoughts with regard to policy in general. And I really don't know the history too well. I'm just poking my nose into the scenario since I'm now getting these notices. But it strikes me, when I was living in Africa and working in Africa, I saw the approval by the Atascadero City Council, probably none of you, of Walmart in this town. And it alarmed me, because I wondered whether or not our education with planning commissions and with city councils understood that local dollars spent in local businesses return 76% greater return to the community than if they are spent in box stores in outside corporations. I got the opportunity to spend time with Tracy Mitchell, who really worked with local living economies, and then eventually with David Corton, who wrote the book When Corporations Ruled the World, and Tracy wrote the book on big box swindle. And when you look at the amount of money drained that leaves the community versus is reinvested, I think, and I know you have to deal with rules and laws and regulations outside of Atascadero's jurisdiction, with state, et cetera, but I think with a bias towards how we develop with regard to encouraging local businesses and local spending makes the most sense from the standpoint of community health and the economics of the community. So you're probably all aware of that. In that case, I apologize for my comments, but I just wanted to say that at least this project, over the course of the history that's been presented, is moving more in that direction. This may negatively affect the value of the property I own, but I still say for the merit of this community, it's important. If you go to our parks and our little baseball stadiums, and I have a grandson playing in the Little League type of activities, you look at who's advertising, putting their banners up, it's local businesses. I know when I was in the community, I used to go to Hewitt Hardware often and Grisanti's, because they were local businesses, and to local pharmacies. And we know that we've lost so much of that now. It's delightful to see Hewitt with the third generation running that business. And I hope that this development can attract local businesses, and that somehow, as a community, we support you as elected leaders and our planning commission to think in terms of how we invest in policies and encourage and incentivize that for the health of the whole community. With that, thank you for listening. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. LaSalle. Welcome, next speaker.
Devin Hagee, and originally I was going to speak on behalf of the Dove Creek Project, but following after that gentleman, that's going to be hard to speak against. I just want to say one quick thing. Right now, if you drove through Dove Creek, they have a parking problem that's existing without any further development. If this lot was not developed at all, Dove Creek still has an HOA parking problem. I don't think that problem should flow over to the development. The development has less parking space, or excuse me, more parking spaces than what's required. They could use a density bonus and have a bunch of housing and probably half the parking spaces that's required. So I am supportive of this project. I like the way that it's looking. They've been very working through DRC, Planning Commission, and City Council multiple times, and everything that has been brought up over those committees, they have actually taken in their plan and kind of addressed going forward. So I'll cut it short, and I'm in support of this project. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hagee. Welcome, next speaker.
Good evening, City Council members. My name is Jack Phelan. I am President and CEO of Cal Coastal Communities, and the original developer of the Dove Creek development. They received unanimous authorization to proceed from this council.
with a general plan amendment that allowed for the residential development to occur on this commercially zoned site. CalCoastal ran multiple community engagement workshops with the local residents, and we received unanimous DRC approval on April 29, 2021. We were tentatively scheduled to present to Planning Commission on June 15th, as everyone was extremely excited and the Planning Department worked very hard to expedite the Dove Creek development. CalCoastal had major very minor landscape and engineering updates that were required by the Commission hearing before our business partner essentially pulled the plug on the hearing date, claiming extreme urgency focus and to close on the former Walmart site at Del Rio Road. And we did just that. CalCoastal Communities purchased that site. Ted Lawton, my partner, and myself are on title with one of our partner, Jennifer Kim's brothers, who we do not know really, and she refused to sign anything. Ted Lawton and I spent over a year and all of our remaining personal capital getting the Del Rio Ranch entitled, which included the unheard of RV parking approvals and allowances for interim use. Meanwhile, Jennifer Kim was working secretly with outside developers on both of these projects without our knowledge or consent, in essence breaching all of our signed partnership agreements and corporate resolutions without any correspondence with us whatsoever about these activities. We have signed partnership agreements with the Kim family to develop the Dove Creek and Del Rio projects. I have written personal checks for the critical pre-entitlement studies on both of these projects. For Dove Creek, this includes architectural design, civil engineering, environmental studies, traffic studies, soils reports, and topographical surveys. I only learned of Jennifer Kim's efforts to secretly work with these outside developers after seeing a city hearing notice posted on a telephone pole. I immediately retained legal counsel and put a lien on the Dove Creek property, as I have over $300,000 of personal loans and capital in the property with a signed promissory note with the Kim family that is over 2 years in default, and Jennifer Kim now claiming through her attorneys that she never signed. Here's a copy with her signature. Basically, her lawyers reached out after the most recent Planning Commission hearing and basically grossly inaccurate, gave an inaccurate offer of the paid back promissory, and immediately then moved to expunge my note, which apparently happened today, which essentially steals a very sizable chunk of my family's personal life savings.
Mr. Phelan, your 3 minutes are up.
Okay.
If you have anything written that you want to hand to, you can hand it to...
I will. My final question in this comment is I'm asking City Council this evening to place a condition on the Dove Creek project that the situation be resolved in an appropriate manner, which, as I'm sure you know, is within your scope and ability based on many of our development colleagues' experiences in neighboring jurisdictions.
Thank you.
I ask you to do this for my family and the best interests of this community.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your time.
And next speaker.
Good evening, dear City Council and City staff. Thank you so much for all your hard work that you do for this wonderful city of Atascadero. My name is Ted Lawton, and I'm here to share with everyone a solution and a path forward for the Dove Creek project. I'm not here to talk about what we've discovered and believe is a pattern of fraud by our business partner introduced to us by the City of Atascadero and the devastating impact it's had across all of our projects, partnerships, businesses, and our personal lives. I'm not here to talk about the years and years of personal investment and life savings we've poured into all these projects that are currently in jeopardy. I'm not here to talk about all the delays we believe we've experienced on Grand Oaks as a direct result of our trust of this partner, as we would have been done with the project by now and purchased a Dove Creek property on our own. I'm not here to talk about all the partners' fiduciary responsibilities and duties to paying off our Grand Oaks investors and providing additional security for them through the joint ownership of the Del Rio, Grand Oaks, and Dove Creek properties. I'm not here to talk about what we believe are many, many aliases of the partner that we found, bench warrants that we've found, pending lawsuits that we found that we believe are connected to fraud.
Could you let us know what you are here to talk about then?
Yeah, I'm almost there.
Thank you.
I'm not here to talk about the new local development partner who wants to build this project that would not only provide regular TOT to the city, but upwards of $50,000 a month in community grants, which is approximately $6,000 a year in perpetuity to support the city community projects and programs. What I am here to talk about this evening is how we can protect the members of this community, protect the Tascadero investors who are local postal workers, teachers, and nurses who live here in the city. We understand that it is not normal for cities to get involved with civil disputes. However, we also understand that it's highly irregular for cities to set meetings and make recommendations for people to partner on projects in the city, which is exactly what happened with us. We also believe that the city does have some level of obligation to protect the citizens from this type of behavior. Therefore, we humbly ask the city to protect our investors, the citizens, by placing conditions on this project that we know cities can place conditions on projects however they would like, and it's very common practice. Even if the ethical and moral considerations are not a motivation for the city to condition the project, we would also like the city to consider the economic factors, as this project will likely be tied up in litigation for many, many years with no positive outcome. We think this would be unfortunate considering with simple condition on the project to have all legal matters resolved prior to permit issuance, that it would actually expedite all parties involved with the project to come to resolution. Again, we ask for the city to help expedite the resolution process, protect our investors, protect the citizens, protect the new developer, and create a path forwards in to expedite resolution, which we believe is in everyone's best interest. Thank you for your time and thoughtful consideration. We humbly seek resolution. With gratitude, Ted Lawton.
Thank you, Mr. Lawton.
Any questions.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
So, guys, I missed you, so I figured I'd come back and talk a little more. My name is Randy Carminetti. I wanted to read a direct quote from one of the longest standing homeowners in the Dove Creek area. And I quote, "We need something on that property. We bought in with the idea of a coffee house, mom-and-pop shops, and a small pub. Those would be ideal. Not happy about a hotel being on that property. Parking is not so good over there. Without it, I think that would cause people to filter into our area and take all the parking." With that, end quote. With that said, can the city step up and maybe buy a property real close by and put some parking over there instead of putting it all on the developer? I mean, is there something else we could do? There's a lot of open area adjacent. I heard somebody here in the audience owns a property nearby. That would be my solution. It's kind of what San Luis does, so I just figured I'd throw it out over here. Thanks.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
Hi, my name is David Singer. I'm a resident of Atascadero. I'm also the association manager for Dove Creek HOA. And I just wanted to present some of the concerns which the council is currently dealing with. We very much would encourage the council to make sure that any agreements on the parkway surrounding the 5 acres and for the maintenance on Cashin and Bliss to be in place prior to losing any control over the project. I have no, we also would like to make sure it gets put in their association CC&Rs. We have no doubt that the current developer will honor that, but should that developer sell off and we have an association and there's nothing in writing, we're going to have a problem. The other thing I'd like to encourage, a lot of my association members have indicated that on Cashin coming out to El Camino during the school year at 7:30 in the morning, only one time, but at 7:30 in the morning it's a zoo. And it's going to be, you're going to have accidents, whether or not they're fatal, I don't know. But, and I don't know what the answer is to solve that problem. I don't know that with all the work they've already done that you could really move the entrance on Cashin in the project. There is room for that second lane that was discussed out on the project, but it is a very big concern. And again, this only typically apparently happens at 7:30 in the morning. I'm not there, but I'm sure other people are. Let's see, we would like it very much, and it seems like the developer would cooperate with this, to have the condos that are going to be purchased have the CC&Rs require a 30-day minimum rental period if they're going to be rentals, so that we did not have to deal with individual owners using Airbnb. And Lastly, I mean, parking has been discussed ad nauseum, and I think somebody just brought it up. However, if there's not enough parking in the commercial parking area, you know they're going to be on Cashin. They can't be on Bliss because you can't really park there. They're going to come into our association. And yes, there's ways that we can take care of that with an expensive permit process and security service, all of which really shouldn't be dumped on to the association. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Welcome, next speaker.
Jeff Hosslin, just a quick question. In the presentation of earlier, there was something said about so many parking spaces that would not be available for general parking. I'm just asking why and if we can go back and look at that, because I would think that just knowing I have friends at Dove Creek and parking is very difficult in Dove Creek, it's going to be difficult here even though they are putting more parking in than they would have to. I would think in the evening all parking spots should be available, that if the public's coming down for a beer, or dinner, or whatever might be going down there. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public wishing to speak on this item? All right, I'm not seeing any. We'll go ahead and close public comment, bring that back to council and staff. Perhaps you could answer Mr. Oslin's question with regards to the parking, kind of going backwards.
Yes, so there is a condition in here that talks about which parking spaces would be reserved, and so it would be the 12 garage spaces, because there's no way for those to be accessible to everybody, and then the tandem spaces, and it's just designating the use for that, so not saying that residents couldn't use that, but the condition would allow the applicant to be able to have some restrictions on time of use. So if they wanted to restrict that from 8 to 5, that it's only employees, and then after that it's open to anyone else, that's what the condition language provides.
Okay, thank you. One of the questions, Mr. I think it was Carminetti, if I got your last name correct, talked about, you know, maybe the city purchasing property in San Luis and maybe Pismo do that kind of thing because they are flush with money. We are not a city that is flush with money to buy property used for parking. But I will ask, I think there is potentially some conversation that the owner has been having with nearby possibly the church, seeing maybe there's some options for employee parking. Could you speak to that?
I can speak to it a little bit. I do know it's been a discussion for multiple years when we talk about development on this parcel to potentially have some parking arrangement with the Dove Creek Church that's on the corner of Santa Barbara Road and El Camino. Certainly, if the developer feels like his project is not being successful because of parking, I know that that option is available, and I know they have an open line of communication.
Okay. And obviously, from the hearing from the owner, that they know that having successful parking is a successful project. So let's see. Definitely, we're all about encouraging local businesses, so very excited about that. We don't control that as a city, but we certainly like to see it when local businesses come to town, and this certainly is that type of development. Let's see. Mr. Gold was asking about what is the sound time, like a cutoff for sound if an event was happening. I'm assuming it's similar to a sound ordinance if your neighbor was having a party.
Yeah, generally it sort of follows our ordinance. Because this has kind of an indoor-outdoor component, generally for purely outdoor amplified noise, we would require an administrative use permit. Because this is kind of an indoor-outdoor space, I don't know that you would want to put that restriction on this project. Certainly, if you wanted to ensure that no amplified music went past a certain hour, you could place that condition on the project. Or conversely, if you wanted them to go through an administrative use permit process for any amplified noise in the courtyard area, you could make that clear as well.
Okay. But what are just our current sound ordinance? There's, I'm assuming, like a 10 p.m. or some type of a cutoff.
Yeah, it's at 10 p.m.
Thank you. Okay. And Mr. Gold, you also mentioned, you know, wanting shared maintenance on the park, and I think, you know, as you recognize, there is a shared utilization between the common spaces, and so, you know, the current 279 units in that HOA won't be paying for the other common space area, but you will be, you know, using that and sharing that. So I think we're seeing that as a nice, you know, working together and being able to use each other's space, and it will complement each other well, but not having to, you know, okay, how much are you using our space and we're using your space and figuring that out, because it's really not feasible. Let's see. I'd ask our Public Works Director, Mr. DeVar. Mr. Gold also brought up the roundabout on Bliss and kind of concerned about overflow and people parking and maybe potential for signage or redlining to make sure people don't and park in an unsafe way.
Yeah, I know the roundabout is it's fairly narrow, so I think if you had a car parked in there, it would block anybody from going through there, so they'd probably be ticketed and towed in a hurry. So I think, you know, that could be something that would be watched. And on Blitz, it looks like the one, there's a center median, and it looks like that drive aisle from Santa Barbara going into Dove Creek is not wide enough, but the other side going out, it looks like maybe has, I don't know if people park along that opposite curb, but looks like there might be some availability there. But as far as right curb through the roundabout, I doubt it's necessary, because they'd probably just get towed anyways, because nobody else could go through there.
Yeah, but probably maybe a portion on Bliss that it would be appropriate, or
potentially, yeah, and maybe in cash on near El Camino, perhaps.
Okay.
If those drive aisles are better defined there, I would probably recommend some red curb along from the drive entrance into this project to El Camino might be warranted.
Okay. I mean, I would expect most people probably wouldn't park there, but people can do kind of funny things.
You never know.
I'm confused because I'm looking at the aerial of this on my phone, and I'm questioning staff. I mean, do people park on Bliss now? Go on the section that Nick DeBar is referring to from Santa Barbara to this traffic circle?
No, it's not wide enough because, like Mr. DeBar said, there's a median that's there, so it's a narrow drive aisle on that side.
Okay, so even if it was posted, then there's no parking, there'd be no loss of current parking.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, and I assume nobody should be parking in the circle.
I'm not sure I've ever seen anyone park in a parking in a traffic circle. So I try to get out of those as fast as I can because I don't know quite where I'm going. I think if I encountered them more regularly, I'd be more comfortable with them. Let's see. Ms. Harvey was talking about the red-legged frog that she said is a potential migration area, so it doesn't sound like it's something that, you know, with the EIR that's been done in the past and, you know, current regulations, if it's something that is required or that we even know that species is currently there.
Yeah, I think with the maintenance of the commercial pad, the habitat has not crept up there. Obviously, there's some habitat in the creek area. I think she alluded to potentially using the drainage solution on site as a potential habitat area. I don't know that we would want to condition that. There's very specific requirements for drainage and infiltration, and they have to be designed in a certain way to allow water to infiltrate and not stand sometimes. Having said that, they generally are above ground landscaped areas that would provide habitat for butterflies and all sorts of animals. Potentially some frogs would move in, so those are intended to be landscaped areas designed to the regional board standards.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, and I think that captured the questions. So let's see, I've got a mess of notes, although probably not as bad as Councilmember Borbeau.
Right.
You should see, I walked by and he had this piece of paper, and I'm like, what is that? And it's chicken scratch, which...
there you go.
All right, so some of the things that we are looking at that I think we probably have some agreement on is that language that you have that Ms. Fowler, you shared with us regarding like a local contact person for the hotel itself. I think that's something that we can probably all
I think there absolutely needs to be a local contact.
Yeah. Okay. The parking in the garage and enforcing that, having that within our conditions of approval, I'm thinking that also is something we're...
And by in the condition of approval, you mean it would be incorporated into the HOA CC&Rs?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if staff can just interject, we actually like those to be done as a separate agreement because the city doesn't enforce CC&Rs and they can be changed at any time. So we usually record those as a separate covenant.
And so when you say record is separate, that would be a condition of approval to have that be in the CC&Rs. Is that?
Right.
It's a condition of approval that we record a separate deed covenant that specifies certain requirements of the site. I think we have a condition that has that laid out for certain things, and so we can add anything else that you wanted to cover into that condition.
Got it. Okay.
Can I come?
Councilmember
Harris. This condition that you must park in the garages is going to be enforced by who? By the HOA,
HOA.
Right?
Correct.
Right.
Case. And the only reason I bring that up, and I don't want to be a buzzkill here, but I live in an HOA where that's part of our CC&Rs. You must park in the garage. And you drive through the neighborhood, I would say a good 80 to 90% of the homes have their car parked in the driveway. So the HOA not enforcing it because most of them want to use their garages in a different way, I'm hoping that this isn't what can happen here. I mean, it's only enforceable if everybody abides by it. But when you start having most of the users ignore it, and then it just can't be enforced. It's just going to be rhetoric in the CC&Rs that. So I don't know if there's another mechanism to enforce that.
Well, Councilmember Dares, though, if I may, I would think we heard from Mr. Ross that they actually would like to do that and prefer to do that and put that in their CC&Rs.
We wanted them to also, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, I think the distinction, though, is, I mean, in a neighborhood like yours, if people are, you know, not parking in their garage and are parking out in their driveway, they have a personally owned driveway to park in, and the people here would not, and therefore, you know, they're not parking in their garage would directly impact their neighbors and the availability for parking, of parking for other residents and, you know, customers, et cetera, whereas that wouldn't be the case in a regular single-family neighborhood unless... You know, as long as you got a big enough driveway to park in. So I think, and we're not going to enforce it. We're saying you have to include this in the CC&Rs that the HOA can then, you know, have a big argument internally about enforcing or not enforcing.
Yeah. Okay. Another one I think we had a conversation about, and I think it was Mr. Jess said no objection to limits of short-term rentals. And so I think Mayor Pro Tem Funk, were you the one that initially brought that up, the short-term rentals? So that would be on the 71 units, restricting that those could not be used as short-term rentals. Is that correct?
Right, that they would be owner-occupant and not be used as short-term rentals. I would suggest that we circle back to listen to what language this council developed on the Dove, on Barrel Creek, might be applicable on that. Do you happen to have that language?
I do have some language that residential units may not be used for short-term rentals, and we did have an exception. Residential units may not be used for short-term rentals, and there was an exception for owner-occupied homestays. So when the owner is physically on site and they rent a room out, that could be allowed. That also could impact parking. So I think the council could decide whether or not they wanted to allow a short-term rental in a room in a house that's owner-occupied, or if they wanted to say no to all short-term rentals in the 71 units.
I would be okay with allowing owner-occupied thing. We're talking two-bedroom units, max, one or two bedrooms, and so you're not going to... You might be short-term renting the other unit, that in an environment that you shouldn't have a lot of. I don't see that as privilege as being as subject to abuse. You know, I'm.
Got it. Okay.
You know, willing to listen to what my colleagues say on that.
Yeah, I want to be clear though that when we say owner-occupied, I mean obviously in a condo. Somebody could be renting the condo on a long-term basis. You know, I own the condo, I rent it to this person to live in on a long-term basis, not a short-term rental. Because I absolutely agree we should not allow short-term rentals. But if I own or rent a two-bedroom unit and I, you know, want to get a roommate to help pay the rent.
No, we're talking short-term rentals
right
now.
Exactly. Yeah. No, but I mean, we keep saying using the phrase owner-occupied, and that's not entirely the case.
I think what we're trying to say is that what we don't want is someone to buy a two-unit place or one-unit place and they live elsewhere.
And they're going to rent it out on a nightly basis.
Short-term rental.
No,
that's what we don't
just want to be clear.
Yeah.
We are talking about short-term rentals, not strictly limiting it to owner-occupied. But
you
cannot rent this out for a day, a weekend, or 25 days.
Correct. So what Mayor Pro Tem Funk is saying is she would not mind the language that we used at Barrel Creek. That is that if you are living there, and let's say you're a one person in a two-bedroom place, that we would be okay with a short-term rental on, if somebody wanted to Airbnb one bedroom, but they're living there and overseeing everything.
Right. I just want to be clear clear for the public. I mean, when we say no short-term rental, we mean no short-term rental.
So. Yeah, which is 30 days or less.
Right. Not long-term. It doesn't restrict long-term
Airbnb.
Rentals.
Yeah.
People buying them and renting them.
Yeah, we're thinking of it more in the Airbnb and VRBO type of thing. Councilmember Darris, how do you feel about that language?
I'm in agreement with that. I don't think short-term rentals are appropriate.
Okay. So same. So basically same language as Barrel Creek. The other thing I would like to, I would be in favor of us removing that condition of approval, number 15, on the deed restriction, obviously for the reasons stated by the applicant that you have a challenge just trying to find people who can qualify because of the way the financing works. I think because we've got, a third of these units that are affordable by design. I'm also not a huge fan of the deed restriction, as these are units where you want people to be able to buy them and actually start building some equity and building wealth for themselves. And when you have the deed restricted, you're very limited as to what you can build. So that would be my preference, Mayor Pro Tem.
I'm comfortable with that. What we're trying to do with a council policy that incorporates affordability criteria into projects is make sure that there we grow opportunities over time for people who are teachers or teacher's aides or other jobs that don't necessarily pay the highest to be able to have opportunities to grow their lives in this community. And the kind of housing that we're aiming for with moderate thing are young people building their careers and seniors who want to downsize. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I see in these smaller units on the property that would be meet affordable by design criteria. And I think that it meets the entire spirit of what we're trying to do and more in terms of that being a really critical piece, slice of the housing market that's not very well available right now in the community.
Excellent.
So I'm
all
good
right.
with it.
And my other two colleagues?
Yeah, I agree. We should not. Okay. We should remove that condition.
All right. So those were the things that I had written down. Are there other items? Oh, I know. The other one had to do with the allowed options, allowed uses, if we could go to that page. And
while Luke is pulling that up, I also heard mention of potentially striping on Cashin for a turn lane. And if we wanted to explore that, I think we could specifically add a condition just so that everybody understands intent.
Do we know specifically enough to be able to add the condition?
Yeah.
I kind of felt like it was something a little more like, hey, if this works and, we're kind of working together on this, that, let's go ahead and do this. I didn't get the sense that, hey, we definitely want this. It was, I kind of feel like I would trust us to work together and see, does this make sense for the neighborhood? Does this increase safety? And I don't know how we could condition that just as a, I feel like it'd have to be more specific.
You could maybe list something like additional traffic control pavement marking and signage as approved by the city engineer.
Okay.
My wording was much less engineering than that.
Okay, or whatever Kelly says.
Yeah. I completely agree, Mayor. I would defer to the city engineer, and their traffic expertise on this sort of thing.
Yeah. All right. So we could have something like what Nick just said, which was lovely.
He's going to text it to me. So
I was going to say, I'm sure Laura just captured that instantly. Or not. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the allowed uses. My thought is that we would remove things like the financial services, the libraries and museums, assuming that, like an art show or art kind of thing, that could still be retail or, you know, temporary seasonal events. Like, that doesn't stop that type of thing. Membership organizations and certainly schools, business and vocational. Yeah, and then the offices as well. Well, offices, if somebody was trying to do like a little co-working type something, when we say just offices, what is simply
so
the offices
is very broad. It does include co-working. What you could do with offices, if you were iffy about it, is move it to the conditional use permit list, and then it could be reviewed to make sure that it wasn't in the prime commercial location,
okay,
for example, if you were on the fence about that one.
Okay, so if it was something where, you know, we thought, oh, we had no idea this was considered office, and here it is, let's, yeah, that's something that we might want. Personal services, that would be your kind of spa, hair, that type of thing, which, you know, could certainly be there. I don't know if...
Could be neighborhood serving.
Yeah, could be neighborhood serving.
So, I mean... I agree, offices conditional, but personal services, I wouldn't rule that out.
Okay. So anything besides the financial services, libraries and museums, schools, or office? Oh, membership organizations.
Yeah, excuse membership organization, because that, when you say membership, it implies it's not open to the general public, and
correct,
therefore that may not be what we or the people in the neighborhood are looking for. Can you explain that? Because it seems like that wouldn't be a great fit.
That's correct.